Green Sense Radio is brought to you by Green Sense Farms. We're changing the world with sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
Welcome to Green Sense, a weekly look at the people, policies, and innovations that are changing our world. Here's Robert Colangelo.
Thanks for joining us. I'm your host for the show.
I'm Bob Kessler, executive producer. This week, we'll check in with Tom Appel of Consumer Guide Automotive. He was at the Chicago Auto Show, which calls itself the biggest in the country, maybe even the biggest in the world. We'll see what the green car outlook looks like there. Plus, Michael Canellis, our longtime contributor, has the latest on green tech, a lot of it having to do with saving water.
All coming up on this week's edition of Green Sense. He's always insightful and an enthusiastic contributor to Green Sense. We're joined now by the guru of green technology, Michael Canellis. Welcome, Michael.
Robert, thank you very much. Great to be back.
Well, it's been a while since we've talked, and you've been following green tech for some time. When we first met, you were with Green Tech Media, then as a contributor to Forbes. And since we last spoke with us, you've become an industry champion for water at OSI Soft.
OSI Soft basically is like, think of us as like an EKG machine for industry. We capture all the data from your machines, your transformers, your big chemical production units, things like that. Grab it, capture it, make sense out of it so people can make repairs or reduce the amount of energy they use and just really see what's going on.
How have you become an industry champion for water?
Well, we work with, end up with a lot of water utilities and a lot of like large industrial companies that use a lot of water in their manufacturing. And one of the big problems they're all facing now is they want to reduce the amount of, basically they want to be more efficient. I didn't know this until I joined here. Water utilities are typically the biggest power consumers in their community. It takes about 30% of the cost of water is just electricity. And so they're always trying to figure out ways to like reduce the amount of power they're using and do things like reduce the amount of leakage or prepare for floods or things like that.
Well, we just recently did a story on Cape Town, South Africa, and it's predicted to run out of water in 2 months. And you were one of the first to mention future water conflicts. And you've written about the cheapest source of water being recovering it from leaks. So embellish a little bit about that.
This is kind of fun. It's and this comes from a bunch of studies actually that have been out there, is that water utilities lose a lot of water through leaks. Now, it's not surprising because think of it. Look at their infrastructure. It's spread over hundreds of miles. It's underground. And oftentimes it's decades old. In fact, in Philadelphia, I think it's 20 to 30% of the pipes are close to 100 years old. Same thing in San Francisco, same thing in Chicago. Right, exactly. So what happens? You lose a lot of water. The city of Manila in the Philippines was actually losing 67% of its water from the processing plant before it got to the tap. So what people are doing now is they said, we can't do this, right? If you lost 67% of the food in a factory, you'd be bankrupt in a week. So what they're doing is putting little sensors out there. And if all of a sudden there's a huge drop in flow, it's going from, or pressure, it's going, X pounds per square inch to zero. there's probably a leak right there. So they go out in the truck. They can dig exactly in that one single spot and fix it. And what happens is you can save just a crazy amount of water. One of my favorite examples is there's a small regional water utility called the White House Utility District in Tennessee. And it serves about 130,000 people. And they were losing 32% of the water, one third, right? So they got some sensors, they got some software and began to track leaks. And it's funny, it's what they found, and their computer would say, okay, there's a leak on Farnham Street. And they'd go out there and they'd go into somebody's backyard and there'd be like garden gnomes and a little bridge. And they'd talk to the owner and the owner would say, yeah, this is great. I have a natural spring in my backyard. I'd say, that's actually not a natural spring. That's a water main that's broken. And they're like, what? And they actually saved like $1 million in 2 years. Just well, by Michael, patching up these leaks. Now they're making water in the States.
But finding leaks is great. But when you get into a situation with Cape Town where there's just not supply, then it becomes a lot more complicated than just being able to recover your lost water. Any thoughts on that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, first of all, I think recovering lost is, I think most cities, it's still not being done. I bet if you went down to Cape Town and looked at it, there'd be tons of areas you could do it. Second of all, you go toward things like recycling. That's becoming more and more popular. You see it in San Diego, see it in Los Angeles. Two ways of recycling. One is you recycle it to the point where you can use it for, let's say, washing things or irrigation, or you can go the full length and have it done for water. There's a lot of water that's going down storm drains that could be used again. It doesn't need to go out to the ocean. That would be the second one. Third one is you're also seeing a lot of interesting experiments in modular desalination. Now, desalination is super expensive. I think regular water is about $1.50 for 1,000 gallons to process in the U.S. Desalination is like $8 or $9. But now you're seeing smaller modular units, which are easier to put in, easier to install. The price will be coming down. So South Africa, should they have prepared for this a long time ago? Absolutely. But in a lot of ways, not to sound too Pollyanna, but there are technologies and techniques out there they could use now to start ameliorating the problem.
Yes, this water issue, a lot of it comes down to just management. It's not a shortage, but we have to get much better with managing it. Well, let's move on to another topic. Another prediction you've made is how traffic will drive the smart city. First of all, tell us how you define a smart city, and then second, how will traffic drive it?
Yeah, smart city is funny. There's conferences almost every week. Oh, the Smart City 2050 Forum, and the UN on smart cities. I mean, and bottom line is, everyone's moving to the city, right? 54% of the world right now lives in large urban areas. There's all these big, massive megacities going up in Asia. I read somewhere, I think it's the UN predicts that China will have 221 cities with 1 million people or more in them by 2030, I think. Just a massive number, right?
Yes.
So everyone's moving to cities, right? But what happens? What's the one thing people complain about? Traffic. So it's actually the first thing they'll get money. Yeah, because, people say, we want open space. Okay, you'll have that. And, we want shopping is easier. But when you're stuck in traffic, you're going to be complaining about it. Every time I go to one of these conferences, it's like 40% of the time people are talking about traffic. And they're talking about Uber. Oh, it's a great solution. No, it's increasing traffic. We've got to do more to get those people off the streets. So, smart cities tough to get off the ground because it's such a wide-ranging thing and there's no central authority and, the money's tough. But people are willing to actually concentrate and put money into that.
So how is traffic going to be solved? How will traffic drive a smart city?
That's a big question. I think the city that can solve that is good. Better mass transportation, bigger investments in that. Some things like a few studies have shown like smart parking, like these sensors on bus stops, reserving parking, recovering down the street and things like that. Just an incredible amount of actually time and gas is wasted driving around looking for a spot. So that could help quite a bit. Autonomous cars will help because they don't double park and run into the store and come back, right? They drop you off and they leave. And they don't park. They don't block things as much. That could help quite a bit. And you can get things done. It's not as stressful.
Well, theoretically, as autonomous cars come in, we are going to be overbuilt. You're not going to need as much parking space. You won't need as many garages and driveways. And I think as you start to see more and more consumables being delivered through companies like Amazon, you're going to see a lot less brick and mortar. So it's going to be amazing how the real estate in a city and an urban area is going to change greatly.
And if you see drones, everyone thought drones would be crazy for delivering stuff. But imagine if you could take all the Amazon delivery vans off the street.
Yes, it'll be amazing. So it's almost so hard to predict the future because there's so many technologies simultaneously entering. It's hard to calculate all the permeations on how the world's going to change.
Exactly.
There. But it will be interesting. Well, let's hit on one last forecast you had, that small businesses will get more into the act. And I think you've mentioned this maybe just a little earlier, and you were referring to utilities on modular desalinization plants. But how will that look, and what do you mean in regards to green tech and small businesses?
I think small businesses right now, I think they're not terrified, but they're definitely concerned. You know, think of all the retail establishments that are, oh my God, what am I going to do with Amazon breathing down my neck? Or, you know, they always need to do something different. And what's good is technology is really, really coming down in price. So you can do a lot more than you could have in the past, and it's being much easier to use. Things like drone delivery. If someone cracks the code and had to do that well, small business can invest in it too. You can probably get it as a service. You see a lot of people actually in solar, for instance. 5 years ago, everyone thought it was going to be the big installers like Solar City and Sungevity and things like that. What happened? Now what's more popular are actually the people, individual installers based in a city where they know the market pretty well. They're succeeding. The big chains are struggling.
Well, Michael, it's always great to have you on the show. We're going to have to not have such a long hiatus from times that you're on that we've had last time. So I welcome you back and thank you for sharing your insights.
Oh, thank you.
That's Michael Canellis joining us on GreenSense for another look at the state of green technology today and in the future. I'm Robert Colangelo, and you can subscribe to our podcast when you visit greensensefarms.com.
This is Bob Kessler, executive producer of GreenSense Radio. Every week, we cover environmental issues and meet passionate people and sustainable innovators. You might have noticed we do it with very few commercials. Our advertisers, they're just part of what supports GreenSense. We need the help of our listeners, also passionate people who care about the planet and know the value of independent media, which matters now more than ever. We've just launched our fundraising drive so you can help us continue to bring you informative and inspiring shows. Your contributions will cover our small production staff, which seeks out and schedules interviews, edits them, and puts together GreenSense every week. Plus, there's the cost of online hosting and studio equipment. So when you visit greensensefarms.com, click on Radio Show to make a contribution via Podbean. Takes just a few minutes, and as we often say on the program, individual actions multiplied by millions can yield big results. So if you're inspired by our positive and informative shows, we're asking you to help keep GreenSense going. Visit greensensefarms.com and click Radio Show to contribute to our fundraising drive via Podbean. On behalf of all of us at GreenSense Radio, thank you. Thank you. Sense Radio is brought to you by Green Sense Farms. We're changing the world with our sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
The auto industry does its best to break up winter doldrums with some of its major auto shows in the U.S. happening around the time those of us in colder climates are feeling the cabin fever set in. Consumer Guide Automotive Tom Appel already gave us his report from the North American Auto Show in Detroit. He recently wrapped up a visit to the Chicago Auto Show and has a look at the green cars on display. Tom, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Well, tell us about the Chicago Auto Show. It's the nation's largest and longest running auto show. Did it meet up to its reputation this year?
Yeah, it always does. Actual news coming from the show, not a huge amount of news, but if you're looking just to see stuff, everything shows up in Chicago because, as you mentioned, it's huge. So the floor space alone makes it one of the premier shows on the planet. And if you need to look at everything, everything is there.
It's usually viewed as the truck and crossover show because of its large domestic attendance. Was that the case again?
Not so much this year. It was a mixed bag of new vehicle introductions and a little bit of everything. We had some crossovers, some cars, a little bit of hybrid action, and news from Subaru. Apparently Subaru's been around now for 50 years, so they were celebrating that.
That's hard to believe because when I was a young man, I bought a Subaru Brat, which was a unbelievable car because it had plastic seats in the back of the pickup truck that you could sit in outside. I think those would be outlawed today.
Yeah, for people who don't know, the Brat was one of the most coveted vehicles when I was in high school because those rearward facing seats were just unbelievably cool.
But a nightmare for health and safety experts, right?
Oh, and insurance agents, no doubt.
So what did Subaru do to celebrate its 50th birthday?
So Subaru has, to celebrate the 50th, created and come up with 50th anniversary editions of every one of their vehicles. So it's sort of a value package. It's a trim level that you can get where special trim, special options, special pricing on each vehicle to celebrate the 50th. Kind of cool. You have your choice of colors, and it's available in every product in their portfolio.
Well, we've always been amazed at Subaru because it is a zero-waste manufacturing plant, but their cars aren't always as green as you think they should be based on the reputation and almost the cult-like following. Did you see any good green performance on some of these new 50th anniversary cars?
No, they're otherwise the standard products in their lineup. And I think you raise a really interesting point about Subaru. And full disclosure, I'm a Subaru owner. They've never been quite as fuel efficient as other vehicles, but we have to remember that there is standard all-wheel drive, and it's really good all-wheel drive. So if you live in the new Northeast or in the snow belt here in Chicago, where I'm from, these cars are indispensable in the winter. They're absolutely wonderful. But the cost you pay for that is slightly compromised fuel economy the rest of the year. But that said, given that these are all-wheel drive vehicles and they have that traction, the fuel economy is actually pretty good.
Well, let's move on to the people's choice. And that was the best green car based on the public's voting. And it was the 2019 BMW i8, a beautiful car. Did you ever get a chance to drive one of those?
Yeah, this is a slightly updated version of the i8. and they're giving it a little bit more range. The i8 is a fascinating vehicle because it's a vehicle with approximately Corvette-like performance potential. You do have to plug it in to tap in most of that power, but it's actually a three-cylinder gasoline engine augmented by all sorts of battery power, and it's unbelievable that they get the kind of power and performance out of that they do. I enjoyed the car. I'm a really big guy, so I had a hard time squeezing into that car, but it looks crazy. It works well. Unfortunately for BMW, it doesn't actually sell that well. Their i3, which is their little compact electric vehicle, sells much better.
Well, I've sat in the car, and it's hard to get into, and it's also expensive. What's the price point on that, Tom?
It starts around $130,000 now.
Actually, that's not bad for all the car you get, but it's still way out of the range of most people.
Sure, and if you're comparing it to something like a Corvette, it's almost twice as expensive.
Let's move on to Hyundai, and they showed off the refreshed 2018 Sonata Hybrid and the Sonata Plug-in Hybrid. What'd you like about those two cars?
Well, what I like is that Hyundai is getting into the plug-in business, and increasingly we're seeing plug-in hybrids here at the office and fully appreciating their worth. My full commute is 34 miles, 17 miles each way. If I plug the car in here at the office, I tend to get all the way home on electric power, which means I've used no gasoline at all. The net result is I'm seeing fuel economy at least twice as good as I would with a car you don't plug in. And it really works. It's pretty simple. All you have to do is plug the car in. And then again, if you have to go on a long trip, it's a gasoline-powered car. So we've got a couple of cars at the office right now like that, and it'd be good to see Hyundai doing this. Hyundai's been in the hybrid game before with mixed results. Previously, their hybrids haven't been perhaps the most refined or the best integrated, but they've come a long way since then, and I have high hopes for this car.
Are there other green car highlights from the show that you'd like to talk about?
The only other green car thing that showed up there is one of my favorite cars, and it's one of the most overlooked vehicles, I think, in the domestic market, and that's the Ford Transit Connect wagon. It's Ford's little commercial vehicle that they outfit for passenger use, and it just makes such great use of space. It's small, it's space efficient, it's fuel efficient, and it's affordable. You can do one of these things for $24,000 if you want to, and no one's buying these for that use. They're being used plenty for delivery and for commercial use, but they sell the wagon and they can't get the word out about it. And I'm just saying, if you're looking for a small wagon that's really handy and you don't want something as big as a minivan, you should check this car out. It's really cool.
Well, in the conventional marketplace, was there anything that really caught your eye that you want to speak about?
Yeah, I looked again, and I actually got a tour of the Dodge Ram 1500, which is redesigned for 2019. And the big news here, and it's green news in a big way, is that they're now making standard models hybrid standard, and they're not going to call it hybrid. In talking to Jim Morrison, who's the head of marketing and development for Ram, they talked about the use of the word hybrid and the traditional truck buyer. So they have branded this hybrid system, which is standard on V6 models and available on V8 models, e-torque. So instead of it being hybrid, it provides more power. Wink, wink. I think that's interesting. I don't know what the fuel economy bump is yet. They haven't gotten the EPA numbers back. I think there's the potential there for real fuel economy improvement. Plus, there's plenty of additional power. So it's the best of both worlds. But I just think it's funny that Ram is actually leery of using the word hybrid.
Well, Tom, since you are a guru of gears and you know everything when it comes to automotive, I've got an email this week, and I need to know if this was fact or fiction. And the email started out, it said that Ford, who made the first pickup truck, shipped them to dealers in crates that the new owners had to assemble, using the crates as the beds of the trucks. And the new owners had to go to the dealers to get them, thus they had to pick up the trucks. And that's how the name pickup came from. Sounds feasible, but what do you think? Is that fact or urban legend?
Here, it sounds entirely plausible. Could be true, but here's the thing about that. Before the trucks, which came out, Ford's pickups came out in 1917, the word pickup had been in use before that. Additionally, you had to pick up your Fords long before the pickup. Model Ts were always delivered FOB Detroit, so anything additional, any additional delivery cost you more money. So you probably had it someplace, and you didn't want them delivered all the way because you didn't want to pay that money. So you had to pick up all your Fords long before there was a pickup truck. I like the story, and I completely believe the part about using the crate for the pickup bed. That I'm sure that's true, actually. That makes a lot of sense because most of them were stake beds, which are just wood posts. I don't know if we can confirm the story.
Well, we'll save that for another time. Tom, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Oh, thank you. Always a pleasure.
That's Consumer Guide Automotive publisher Tom Appel taking us through the Chicago Auto Show and possibly through Urban Legend. Read his reviews at consumerguide.com and subscribe to our podcast at greensensefarms.com. We hope you enjoyed this edition of Green Sense. Visit greensensefarms.com to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, and you can check out the list of radio stations that air our show. All you have to do is stay fresh, keep innovating, because when you're green, you grow.
GreenSense Radio is brought to you by GreenSense Farms. We're changing the world with sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
GreenSense is recorded in the Duneland ecosystem on the eastern shores of Lake Michigan. The program is copyright GreenSense Farms, all rights reserved.